to look at two very contrasting meetings that took place where God confronted people and the reaction and response of these people to that meeting. The first one we have in a reading there this morning from Daniel chapter 5, and the way in which the verse 5 brings it in essence before us: in the same hour, or suddenly, came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. The writing on the wall. Now, today there is, sadly, in our society, the increasing thought that we can get off with just about anything. Nobody really notices. Certainly, there's not many people assessing us and judging us and watching over us and taking notes of what we're doing. Accountability seems to be less and less effective today. And because accountability is decreasing, then there is a degree of arrogance increasing. And that can be especially detected in spiritual things. Because we don't know God as we should, that ignorance breeds the arrogance that we can challenge God wherever we like. And He's not watching over us anyway. And we can get off with what we're doing because it doesn't much matter. Today we have a society that keeps on pushing the limits to see whether they'll stretch or whether they'll snap. And these limits are kept in being pushed until we have an experience like Belshazzar had. Until we reach a point and cross the line, a line that is drawn by God. When the day of His patience is past and the time of privilege is behind us. And instead of privilege, the day of reckoning begins. Many opportunities to return and to think our situation through. The watchword of this year we set on the very first service of the year: consider your ways, from the prophet Haggai. So often then the opportunity was given us to consider our ways and to listen to the multitude of ways in which God was speaking to us. But every rejection of these privileges takes us closer to that line which one day we cross. And God says, as He said to Belshazzar, enough is enough. People will be lost, and I mean spiritually lost. People will be lost not because they're great sinners. God is able to save the greatest of sinners. People will be lost not because of the number or the frequency or the spoiling effect of their sins. People will be lost because they perish through the whole life, refusing to take seriously what God has been saying and the responsibility that He gives. Eternity is fast approaching for every one of us. But are we ready for it? Instead, we choose to walk our own way when God all the while is speaking to us. And the day will come for Belshazzar, here vividly set before us. His patience is exhausted. He's been stifling his conscience. God shuts down on the warnings. God has no more to say to him. God is silent. And the writing appeared on the wall. Oh, it's a phrase that's passed into our language. It's a way of referring to anything that's going to end the final chapter. The writing is on the wall, usually in a very somber and serious way. Well, God's writing is on the wall for Belshazzar because God is a holy God. And although He might delay and delay in His patience from acting against the provocations of the likes of Belshazzar, God will not be silent for long. He speaks to us, he calls to us, and one day that tone will change, as it did with Belshazzar, from overtures of patience to the tones of justice. The time of grace, holding back the sword of justice, can restrain justice no more. And the writing appears on the wall for this man. The line has been drawn and the line has been crossed. And we have this fearful meeting, the first one this morning, of God meeting with Belshazzar. Who was this man? Well, rehearsing of the details that Daniel gives to him, Daniel goes over parts of the man's life and says, "You knew this." Belshazzar couldn't plead ignorance. He grew up in the palace and he grew up with all the things that were happening there. He knew, for example, the experience of Daniel and the four men who came and worshipped God and refused to absorb or to accept the philosophy of Belshazzar, his father, and the nation. He knew those who had gone through the fiery furnace and the way in which the Lord Jesus Christ met with them there. Coming closer to home, he saw the way in which God dealt with his own father, the way in which we're told here pride entered into his heart and he set himself against God, and the moment that he put his chin out against God, God brought his chin down to the grass. Yes, he knew the way in which God dealt with his father until his father acknowledged that there is a God in the most high heavens who rules upon the earth and appoints whatsoever he will. All these things were known to Belshazzar. These were the vivid impressions of his growing up days. These were the things that came to his life and the way in which God especially dealt with his father and bringing him to a measure of trust and reliance upon him. And God was, as it were, speaking to Belshazzar himself through the experiences of his father. Yes, they were outside him, but they were happening round about him. And God was speaking to him, and speaking to him, and speaking to him. A man growing up with rich privilege and good spiritual impressions. A man growing up who had wonderful things shown to him and taught to him through the experience of Daniel and the others, through his own father. His memory was furnished and kitted out and fitted out. He couldn't plead an empty vacuum. He couldn't plead ignorance. He knew that God preserved and kept people. He knew God was Almighty acting on behalf of his people. He knew God intruded, and this is important, he knew that God broke in to people's lives. And he had his own father's example to back it up. The way in which God met with his father, humbled him until he learned his lesson. In all of the pride that made him stand out there on the balcony and survey his kingdom and says, "It's mine. I've done it. I've got it. I'm enjoying it." And in the moment that he spoke like that, he was brought down. Yes. He knew God was a sovereign living God who breaks into the lives of people. And this is the man who threw a party bash for 1,000 people. He continued to resist and he remained unbroken. He continued to persevere and to flaunt himself before God and to challenge God. At every step, as it was as if he was throwing down a gauntlet. What's God going to do now? And he took another few steps across the line. What's God going to do now? And another few steps, and he put down another challenge and says, "What's God going to do now?" And all the while, every step,
was taking him closer and closer to that line. Until one of these steps, no great significance to Belshazzar, no great difference in the run of his days or the fulfilling of his life, nothing special except that it was that final step that took him across that line. And God began then to present his account before him. That final act of contempt, when God said, "It is enough. You've been pouring out and pouring out your resistance and rebellion against me, Belshazzar. You've been filling up a big, big jug. And you've been filling it up constantly with all of the provocation against me. And now, it's reached the top. All it needs is just one more drop. And it'll spill over the side." And he did it. We cannot continue headlong regardless of what our consequences of our life might be. We cannot keep on going, keep on doing what we like. We cannot keep on pushing at the envelope, pushing at the line. We've got to learn from Belshazzar just now. We've got to learn of what God is saying to us and speaking to us, the way in which he has been gracious. How many years has it been? Go back ourselves and listen to our own memory speaking with us. All the different experiences we've got. Go back to sermons. Go back to experiences. Go back to texts. So many impressions, we can gather them all together. The Lord has been speaking to us through them all. And what have we done with them? Belshazzar, one more drop in the cup, we said. What was it? Well, he said, "I'm having a party and I need a glass. I need something to drink." And so he says, "Go and get the vessels that my father took out of Jerusalem." Who's going to notice? What do they mean? They're only goblets and cups and vessels. Yes, they're made of gold and silver, but so what? Who's going to notice what we use them for? And he takes God on. This act of desecration. The vessels that were used exclusively in the temple, set aside. And remember that they were set aside and dedicated for God's use only. And now with drunken contempt, he's going to take them and he's going to use them himself. Defying God. Putting his face out against God. Stepping across, pushing the line constantly. This is Belshazzar. Verse 23 sums it up for us. "Thou hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven." You've put yourself up as a candidate, as a contestant against God. You've entered into a battle. Who's going to be the last to blink? Who's going to notice? Why does it bother anyone? And you've taken God on. And that's the last drop in the cup. Defying God. We mentioned there earlier on in the intimations the way in which this defiance of God. Oh yes, we can see it in the life of Belshazzar and we think it's so offensive and gross, so obvious for what it is. But that same defiance of God can be perpetrated amongst us and is perpetrated amongst us as a nation or as individuals even today. Yes, we can take God on We might not have it in the same public arena or demonstration as Belshazzar, but we're doing exactly the same thing. Go back over the laws of our nation. Go back over the things that we've put onto the law book and made respectable. And yet constantly they are underneath God's judgment. The sanctity of life. The sanctity of marriage. The worship of His name and of His day. So many different areas where we have pushed the line. So many places where we've challenged God and taken Him on. And we ask ourselves the question, where are we as a nation? What are we doing and what have we reached? And we complain about the problems and the difficulties that we've got. It's only thankful that they're not worse than they are when you think of the way in which God is displeased with us. And what we see and analyze on a big national scale, when we see the problems we've got because of the spiritual element of our national life, when we take that down to a personal level, the same stands true. And we can apply it in our own minds right now. This one last drop went into the cup and it went over the edge. Only a little thing, you might say, and who's going to notice anyway? And why should somebody bother? It is against God it is done. And it's only a little thing in the mind of some. But it spreads. You get a pane of glass. A big pane of glass and a big window. And you go and nick just a little chip out of a corner of it. It's only a little thing. But it spreads. And it spreads. It spreads. And it spoils and ruins the whole sheet. This man, Belshazzar and his banquet. But the second thing we've got to see and pay attention to here is the breaking in by the sovereign God. We can, in our own imagination, create the scene with this party of 1,000-odd people. We can listen to them laughing and we can hear their frivolity. We can picture up an atmosphere of unrestrained godlessness. Nothing to spoil the process. They are high on whatever they've got and they're determined to abide by nor adhere to any kind of rules or regulations. Anything goes, and woe betide anyone who stands in their way. And that's what they did. They took the vessels. And then there was followed a stunned silence. In the same hour that they lifted the cups and used them in this desecration, in that same hour, God acted. God intervenes that quickly to address the situation. In the twinkling of an eye, it's all up for the king. God has been noting their thoughts and their words and now their acts. And he comes to present his account. The stage at one end of the room is visible to all. A white wall and a dark shape moves across that wall. Not the shape of a hand, not the shape of a man, just fingers, writing four words, staring them in the face. And the way in which they're written in a way that cannot be removed or covered up. It's not something that somebody can go and draw a curtain across or slap some paint on. It's nothing that can be hidden from the eye of man. It's inscribed. And the word that is used implies that it's permanent and visible. All of their faces that once were red are now turned white. The color drains from them. Where they were once laughing, they're now silent. Their conscience is terrified. Their knees are knocking. They're going to pieces. The ones who rule the world are now reduced to almost shriveling lumps Here they are. They who were once on full flight and joy in life are now cringing in fear and terror. What does it mean? They're stammering. Terror has gripped them. They're looking for a meaning, but nobody can enlighten them. It's all over. It's all ended. God has broken in. And just four words. It's all it took. Just four words to turn things around as he has. Just four words. And everything is going in an altogether different direction. The intervention of God, by God, did it to them. He meets people. He changes people. There is this tremendous meeting taking place between Belshazzar and God, to which we are parties and spectators. And it's an experience that is repeated through the Old Testament. Somebody was there sitting at a booth collecting the taxes, and Jesus passed by and spoke to him. There was a meeting taking place that turned that man's life upside down and round about. There was a man going on the road to persecute more of the Christians that he thought were apostate and were untrue to the faith of the fathers. Saul of Tarsus met God on the road, or at least God met Saul on the road. God breaking in and speaking to him. And just in words that were said in that moment of confrontation, changed their lives round about. God does break in. He did it to Belshazzar, he did it to Saul, he did it to Levi, he did it to Peter, the fisherman, did it to so many people. And he does it still to us today. He breaks in just where we are, with our own thinking, with our own character, with our own lives. And God speaks to every one of us, any one of us. But when he does, there's a crucial situation reached. And things are never the same from that point onwards. Breaking in, the intervention by God. And he wrote three words. Nobody at court could answer the situation or answer the question. You can almost imagine, after the writing has taken place, there is Belshazzar and everybody's looking at him. After all, he's in charge. He's the king. And he wants to regain some kind of control. He wants to be seen again, to be in charge. And he says, come on, can anyone tell me what they mean? But nobody can. And then the queen comes and says, there is a person who does know. You've marginalized him. You've set him on the edge. You've put him out of your company and out of your court. You only call upon him when there's a crisis. But he's the one that knows. And so he was called and he takes control. Daniel appears. He didn't want Daniel to be there, obviously, in the party, because that would only be a spoilsport and a killjoy to all the things that he planned in the party. He didn't want Daniel to be there, but the last thing that he wanted was Daniel to be there, in fact. But the first thing that he needed was Daniel to tell him what these things meant from God. And so what Daniel does is he sets out the framework. He doesn't just jump in there and give a meaning of these words. He doesn't come in and explain what they are in themselves. They have a meaning. And they have a meaning for Belshazzar, because it's to Belshazzar that they've come. And so he sets the framework of his life. Daniel begins to rewind his life and he says, look, Belshazzar, this is the way it was with you. And these are the experiences that you've had. And this is what God has done for you in your life. And this is the way God has met you. And God has done so much and so much and so much. And yet, what have you done? Verse 22 and 23. are the pivotal point on the brief summary that Daniel gives. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, you have not humbled your heart, though you knew all of this. Thus far the story echoes what he knows himself. And then there's that one word, especially as a pivot on which everything turns. But you didn't know it, but instead you've done this. You've lifted up yourself against the God of heaven. You refuse to bow. You've went on in pride. You have there strutted the stage and in court in open defiance of God. God who has done this, God, the very God in whom you depend for your very breath, you haven't acknowledged him. And Daniel then says, this is what God says to you. Your days are numbered. God is calling things to a halt. That's it. The line is drawn on Belshazzar and his kingdom. Your rule is over. All the years God has been weighing you up, until now your time is finished. It's over. Your times have been in his hand, but you've chosen not to acknowledge it or to live in accordance with that approach. You've all your days been living as if you were in charge of your life and you were in charge of your circumstances. And all the while your days were numbered and set and appointed by God. What do you do with them? How have you used them? It's a question that devolves down to us just the same way as it came to Belshazzar. What have we done with the days that God has given us? A question that I ask myself. What effect am I having? What effect are any one of us having? Were we to distill down our life, get all of our life together into one little jar, and boil it up and get rid of all the dross and all of the impurities, what would we be left with at the bottom of the jar? It frightens me, because you've got to look so hard to find just a few scrapes and scratches of dust. It frightens me just how little we really achieve in our life. Our days are numbered. What are we doing with them? How are we using them for the God in whom we live and move and have our being? A God who has enriched us with so much in the past and given us and shared with us so many things. A God who has shown to us very personally in our lives over many ways and many days things that have been good for our souls. Our days have been numbered. The second thing he says is, your days have been weighed. All of your things that you've done in life, they've been given a weight and they've been assessed. Oh yes, Belshazzar, you think nobody was looking on to you. You thought you were top dog. Just because you were the king in court, you didn't feel that you were accountable to anybody. Everybody was accountable to you, but you stood above them all. And you could dispense justice, and you could do this, and you could do that, and you felt that you were the absolute ruler. You felt that you had all the gift of power and benefit and blessing in your hand, even of life and death itself. But there was someone above you. There was somebody there looking down upon your binges. There was somebody there looking down upon your selfish indulgence. There was somebody there looking at your life, scrutinizing it in a way that you could never even have guessed at. Your deepest thoughts, your words in secret, your private as well as your public acts, every one of them gathered together and given a moral weighing by God. The whole of your life has flashed before him. And they've been put in the balance. And they don't measure up. You've been found wanting. God, who catches every word, looks at every thought, God, who looks at every aspect and dimension of life, you've been sneering at God. You've been defying God. You've been constantly putting your head against God all these years. And you thought it didn't matter. And you thought that you could get off with it. And so far you have. Until now. And you've been weighed. And you've been found wanting. You might have looked upon the delay. You might be looking upon the way in which nothing was happening the first time you defied God. You might have been thinking, well, there's me. I've done it. Stepped across the line. And nothing's happened. Things are still the same. And you think that God doesn't care and things like that don't matter. But now the day of trifling is over and the reckoning has come. And because of that, so there is to be this consequence. Your kingdom is removed. You've held it tightly and used it ruthlessly and you've indulged yourself with no limitation. But the line is crossed. And the land is no longer yours. The tragedy of this man, that very night Belshazzar was slain, that very night, drunk, going into the presence of God. One more time, one more drink, one more go. What would he be saying? And yet the Bible tells us, fool, this night your soul is required of you. And it happened that very night. What does it matter? Surely we have Belshazzar telling us, shouting at us loudly and clearly. It matters. Only vessels, yes, that his father took on a raid on one of the other nations. Only vessels of silver and gold, that's what they were. But what did this signify? What vessels? God would not be silent in the face of that provocation. A decisive then and a crucial meeting with God. And how did he respond to it and with it? God gives us warnings. Warnings from Belshazzar himself. About what we're doing and how we're living in the light of so much that we know and the experience he's given to us. And especially, he leaves hanging in the air in our sermon. He leaves constantly confronting us today. What is the sum and substance of my life? What have I achieved and what have I accomplished? Am I prepared for the same confrontation as Belshazzar? Am I ready for that same destiny? Where will it be spent? And in whose company? The writing is on the wall for Belshazzar. He breathed his last and so was gone. We yet have breath in our body. We need to learn and to use well the privilege God has given us over these past years, days, our lifetime, that we might be prepared and ready when eternity, looming on the horizon of our life and approaching close to us, when eternity does visit us, are we ready for it? Only in Jesus Christ the Savior can we be prepared and be at peace to meet our God. Let us pray. O Lord, our God, thou indeed art the one living and sovereign God on heaven, and thou dost rule on earth below. And so often the arrogance of people in public office, as well as with ourselves, can be so quickly identified. And may we learn from what we've read from Thy Word and what Thy Spirit has taught us this morning. O Lord, teach us. Teach us that we are indeed accountable to Thee, and that Thou art the God who breaks in a sudden moment to the lives of many different people, confronting and speaking and challenging. Lord, as we've known that in the past, enable us in a day of grace to come to Jesus Christ and to commit our soul and our interests to Him for time and for eternity. O Lord, bless us. Each and every one of us here this morning, bless us richly in Jesus Christ, Thy Son. For we ask it in His name. Amen. We close by singing from Psalm 33. Psalm 33 at verse 10, God doth the counsel bring to naught which heathen folk do take, and what the people do devise of none effect doth make. Oh, but the counsel of the Lord doth stand forever sure, and of His heart the purposes from age to age endure. That nation blessed is whose God Jehovah is, and those a blessed people are whom for His heritage He chose. The Lord from heaven sees and beholds all sons of men full well. He views all from His dwelling place, that in the earth do dwell.